I'm Cameron Strang, and this is a special edition of Unedited. 2020 has been a hard year, to say the least. Whether it's the impact of an ongoing pandemic, or the racial injustice that's gripped our nation, or the toxic political season, or the impact of significant climate disasters, it seems like every day this year has had a month's worth of difficult news. And as we now have the presidential election only weeks away, it seems like anxiety is ramping up even more for many people. So to help us navigate these unprecedented waters, I wanted to talk to one of the wisest Christian leaders I know, Pastor Rick Warren. Rick leads Saddleback Church in Southern California, a sprawling ministry with a global footprint. He's also the author of A Purpose-Driven Life and several other best-selling books. But more than that, Rick has always been someone who lives an example for others. Whether it's being one of the first Christian leaders to challenge the church to take on the AIDS epidemic decades ago, or championing holistic, partner-driven development around the world, or mentoring thousands of pastors, or leading the conversation about faith and mental health in recent years, Pastor Rick lives his life with a humility, wisdom, and intentionality I've rarely seen. After his book, Purpose-Driven Life, became the biggest book in the world 15 years ago, selling tens of millions of copies, he decided to repay every dollar of salary he'd received from Saddleback back to day one. Then he and his wife, Kay, committed to living a life of reverse tithing, living on 10% of his income and giving away 90%. I mean, who does that? Full disclosure, Pastor Rick and I go way back. He took me under his wing a little bit in 2008 as we traveled through Africa together. He's helped me navigate the slippery slope of politics and faith. He's encouraged me with what we're doing at Relevant, and he's been there for me during some very tough times in my life. He's personally a hero and a mentor. The conversation you're about to hear was originally intended to be a 10-minute talk about politics for the Relevant podcast. But as you'll hear, we ended up covering a lot more than that. And when we were done, the Relevant team and I decided we needed to put out this full conversation somewhere. And since that's actually the purpose of Unedited, we thought, hey, let's bring it back for a special episode. So without any further ado, here is my full conversation with Pastor Rick Warren. Well, thanks for doing this. You know, we were talking about politics and how to navigate this season. And, you know, you have personally impacted my worldview so many ways, like from social justice to navigating politics, that I thought, let's call Pastor Rick and see if he'll talk to us. But before we jump into that, I wanted to just ask you how you're doing this year with COVID. How are you? Pandemic stuff. How's the church?
I've been doing a lot of messages on how to keep your energy up. Because everybody is feeling drained, particularly emotionally drained, spiritually drained, and welcome to the club. That's normal. Okay. Right. If you have one light bulb attached to a battery, it's going to last a long time. But if you got 10 light bulbs, that it's going to drain a whole lot faster. And I've actually done a number of messages. I actually, in January when, everybody was preaching their 2020 vision message. I think God was sitting in heaven laughing like, you have no idea what this year is going to be like. And we've actually been hit by what I call five storms. We have the global infirmity.
Right.
That's COVID. Okay. And for the first time in 2,000 years, literally the church has not been meeting for corporate worship, literally all around the world. That's never happened before. Global infirmity. Then we've got social instability. We've got rioting going on in cities and things like that. What started off as legitimate, peaceful demonstrations for justice, liberty and justice for all, which are legit, have been taken over by sideline groups, stuff like that. But you've got social instability. You've got financial insecurity.
Right.
Hundreds of millions of people out of work. Tens of millions of businesses closed. And you have to deal with that. We have racial inequality. Which is for the first time in my lifetime since the 60s, we have the possibility of moving the ball down the field. We're really involved in a lot of that right now. And then the fifth is political incivility. Mm. Okay, people are more angry, more partisan, more. You don't just disagree with people; you demonize them, you stereotype, you stigmatize, and all of these coming at once have created, you know, a lot of drain on people's lives. I immediately switched to a series on the book of James, because James was written to people under intense pressure. Mm-hmm. They were not allowed to publicly worship. They were being persecuted, and they were being spread all over the Roman Empire. Many of them lost their homes, lost their jobs, couldn't see their friends, couldn't get together for public worship. So I am now message this week will be message number 28 mm-hmm. out of 30 messages in the book of James, which I'm calling a faith that works when life doesn't. Principles for handling the pandemic. And I'm actually taping it from my farm every week.
Really?
I have a farm, and I've got a big barn behind me, and I go out there and tape either Friday morning at sunrise or Friday evening at sunset. And bad times for the world are good times for the church, if you're prepared for it.
Have you seen that? Like, has it affected Saddleback? I mean, and your global leadership network?
We've led more people to Christ in the last 7 months than in years.
Why is that?
Well, fundamentally, there are a lot of problems with COVID-19, but fundamentally, it revealed a fundamental weakness in the church, and that purpose-driven churches are not. And that is, we're both on five purposes, not one. If you only have one purpose, most churches only have one purpose: worship. Mm. And if you take worship away, you got nothing. Mm. Okay, so I understand you're in a hurry to get back to worship because that's all you've got. But Saddleback is built not on one purpose, but on five. You take one circle out, we still got four other circles. Mm-hmm. We've got ministry going on. We've got mission going on. We've got fellowship going on. We've got discipleship going on. And those all stand on their own. And so you could take away one thing, and the church didn't shut down. I'm working 12 hours a day. We have led, Cameron, since March, over 16,000 people to Christ.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 16,000. We're in revival. We're averaging about 80 people a day coming to Christ, 80 people a day. Well, one of the reasons is we're the exact opposite of most churches. Most churches, my executive pastor, Steve Johnson, is on a call on either weekly or semi-weekly with the other executive pastors of the large churches in America. Every one of those other churches are always saying, when can we get the community back into the church? When can we get the community back into the church? And that's all they're thinking about. And I flipped it. And I said, no. We might not be in this for a year. How do we get the church into the community? Mm. And so we did the exact opposite. And we looked around and made a list of all the different problems that COVID was calling. And for instance, the first one was food. You know, people needed food. There are a lot of people out of work and they're hand to mouth. And 126 food banks shut down in Southern California when COVID started because there was a run on food. There was panicking. Right. 126 shut down. Saddleback had three food pantries already up and running. And typically in a normal week before COVID, I mean, normal month, we'd feed about 2,000 families a month who were out of work, out of food, about 2,000 a month. The first month of COVID, we fed 45,000 families. And then we figured out you don't have to have a building. We invented a new way of doing food pantry. We call them pop-ups. We said, we'll come to your school. We'll come to your neighborhood. We'll come to your park. We partnered with every school district in Orange County. We partnered with the County Board of Supervisors. And now the recent report I got yesterday, over 13,000 Saddleback volunteers have served over 3.5 million pounds of food to over 300,000 families.
Wow.
We are Saddleback, with bar none, I didn't know they keep a record on it, we're the largest food distributor in Southern California. Nobody even comes close. We've been told this by everybody, politics, everybody. We're the largest food distributor. Well, the other thing is, in purpose-driven, we teach our people, every member's a minister, so they're ready to jump in and serve. But everybody's a missionary, too. You're a witness. Those people already know how to share their faith. And so when people would pull up, they talked to him about the Lord. Of those 16,000 people, it's now over 17,000 people who've come to Christ. Over 12,000 of them have come through personal one-on-one witnessing by my members, not led to Christ by my sermons, but one-on-one evangelism. John Cassetto told me the other day he led a 50-year-old Buddhist couple to Christ. Wow. He said they pulled up to get food, and he said, they said, why are you doing this? I said, well, we're doing this because of Jesus Christ and how he's changed your life. Have you ever heard of Jesus? No, we haven't. We've heard of him, but, you know, what about him? Well, he explained a little bit. Would you like to know more? And they said, well, yeah, we would like. He led him to Christ.
Wow. How is the church funding going from 2,000 to 45,000 when so many churches without in-person giving have seen giving go down over the course of the 6 months?
Well, that's the other thing is Saddleback. When you're purpose-driven, you're built on these five purposes. So it doesn't matter if it's Katrina or fires, like we're having fires, floods, storms, pandemics. Those things just keep on going. If you knock one out, you got the others going. Well, we already had over 68% of our church were already giving online before this thing started. Our offerings have actually gone up. And we've had $3.5 million just given for food pantry. Food pantry. And here's the other thing too, is we started doing, because we're in small groups, you know, Saddleback's the only church with more people in small groups that come on the weekend. Typically in January, we were running about 30,000 people were coming to the weekend services at our 20 campuses, about 15,000 watching online. Okay. About 15. Well, when we shut that down, we said, okay, everybody go to your groups. Okay. We had over 6,000 small groups already operating, okay? We started, since the COVID, over 3,000 new groups. Wow. We have over 9,000 small groups meeting every week. And worship weekend, we went from 45,000, 30 attending and 15 watching, to we now have over 100,000 ISPs watching every week. Okay, so we tripled our attendance by not being there.
How do you think it'll change when you start meeting in person again?
Well, it's interesting. Just today I was on an elder meeting. One of the keys is in a crisis, you always over-communicate. You up your communication. So we went to 2 staff meetings a week rather than 1 a week. It's Zoom, but I've got 500 staff. I meet with them twice a week. We went to a daily elder meeting. For 7 months, we've been in daily, every morning from about 9 to about 10:30, we're leading the church by Zoom. And just this morning, we were talking about how we're going to retrofit our worship center. And we're going to blow out the walls, literally blow out 2 walls and turn it into an indoor-outdoor. So we can have people sitting outside, kind of like in a hotel in Hawaii, where you don't really know when you're walking in, all of a sudden you're in the foyer and you haven't walked through a door.
That's a blessing of Southern California. You wouldn't want to do that in Florida.
No, mosquitoes. We can't do that in a lot of places, but we can do it here. So this morning, we're literally going to blow out the walls and retrofit. We had already been planning 2 years ago. We started on a plan to go back to an outdoor worship venue. That would seat about 3,500 people, which is what the current worship service building holds. And so the people who wanted to be inside could, those who wanted to be outside could too. And so, you know, we're working on that. We're just assuming. I've read a lot of books on pandemics, tons, long before that, because when we were interested in AIDS in the 90s, that was a pandemic. We're flying all around the world. The head of the CDC, right now, is the guy who invented the AIDS program we did in Rwanda.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Bob Redford is a dear friend. He's been at Saddleback. He's a Christian. He's Catholic. And the head of the CDC, dear friend. I called him when this thing first started. I said, Bob, you need any help? He said, yeah, I need you to help get out the COVID 5 things to do. And so you could go online on show this to your son. He'll get a kick out of this. On YouTube, I wrote a song called The Saddleback Shake, SHAKE, five things to do. And it's a dance. It's like, watch me nay nay, watch me whip. Okay. Saddleback did it. And it's on there on five things kids need to remember when they're going back to school, on wash your hands and elbow cough and stuff like that. Anyway, but I did that because Bob Redford asked me to. So I've known this guy for 25 years. He helped us invent the way we did AIDS treatment for that pandemic.
Wow. What do you say to all the Christians who are making this, talking about CDC guidelines and masks and caring for your neighbors? And all of a sudden it's like now the evangelical scene is, you know, it's a freedom discussion. And Christians who you would think would be leading the conversation of caring for others and self-sacrifice for the greater good. Christians are the ones who are saying, don't infringe on my freedom. I'm not going to wear a mask. I don't care about anybody but me. And it's like, I don't understand.
I did a message a few weeks back reiterating 10 reasons we are waiting to reopen public worship. There's enormous pressure. Other churches are, you know, opening up in advance and stuff like, you know, you heard Greg Laurie got COVID, and he was on outside. They're just not wearing masks. Well, people say this is a safety issue, is what I'm saying. It's not a First Amendment rights issue. Mm-hmm. Some churches are complaining loudly that this is an infringement of their right to worship. Well, they might have a discrimination case if theaters weren't closed, football games weren't closed, concerts weren't happening. We're not being discriminated against. Mm. This is a safety issue. If we were the only ones closed, no, nobody's going to NFL games.
Right.
Okay. Regal just closed down 650 theaters permanently. Mm-hmm. Disney just laid off 28,000 people last week.
Yep.
We're not being discriminated against. And some churches are willing to gamble the health of their people. I'm not.
Good.
The Good Shepherd prays for sheep, cares for sheep. One day I will be responsible. I don't want to be a super spreader. I'm not afraid. I'm not doing this out of fear. I'm doing this out of love.
Yeah.
And you wear a mask for love your neighbors yourself.
Right.
And so people have politicized mask wearing. Like, you know, I was just hoping that maybe now that since the president got COVID and wore a mask, that maybe people go, okay, it's okay to wear a mask. Because that's, you know, there's only two ways to stop this pandemic. One is quarantine the people who've got it, okay, and isolate those who are the most vulnerable to get it and take care of them. Now, we started, for instance, we have in our senior citizens, a lot of them were serving in different ministries. So we invented new ministries. We started one called Care Callers, another one called Care Writers. Said, look, we need you to stay at home for your health. I need you as a member, as your shepherd. I'm protecting the flock. I need you to stay at home. Hmm. Okay, you're 70-something. You're vulnerable. I need you to stay at home. Well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you the phone list of our church, and we're going to call through everybody on the phone and say, I'm calling on behalf of Pastor Rick. What's your need? What's your prayer request? How can I help you? Do you need groceries brought to your house? Do you need supplies? Do you need toilet paper? And then we said, you don't like to call? We'll make care writers. You can write notes and calls. So we've invented a bunch of new ministries for people so that they're still active, even though they're not. We actually saw this coming, Cameron, probably about 2 months before the rest of America did, because I've got Saddlebacks overseas. And so Hong Kong, Manila, Saddleback Manila and Saddleback Hong Kong both shut down 8 weeks before anything did in America. Mm-hmm. And I knew they were there. We actually found our pastor in Hong Kong found 1 million masks. Even the government couldn't find it. And Saddleback Hong Kong became the primary distributor for masks in Hong Kong. And we had so many, we couldn't get them all out. So we called all the other churches in and said, look, we're going to make you guys the heroes. Give these masks out to the community. Mm-hmm. So we made all the churches the heroes in Hong Kong.
That's awesome. You talk about the politicization of mask wearing and obviously we are in an unprecedented political atmosphere right now. You and I have talked over the years about you know, we are staunchly pro-life, and that's from womb to tomb. And we are holistically whole pro-life, whole life. Exactly right. Yeah. You gave me that phrase. And that's like at Relevant, that's what we talk about. That this is what Jesus talked about. And we've put it into very clear kind of structure. And like, it's very difficult to be partisan when you kind of have that biblical aesthetic. And, you know, right now, it just seems like that kind of discussion of truly Christian worldview as it engages the political machine and kind of working across the aisle for common good and advocating is impossible. It is not a climate that this is even entertained. It's almost like the division has gotten worse and worse and greater and greater. And I'm just wondering your thoughts entering this political season and this election.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of Christians out there that we talk to that don't know what to do because they care deeply about pro-life issues, but they also define that differently. And they also look at character and they look at division and hatred.
Well, that's not
the
only issue out there.
Right. And they look at, racial justice and they look at other things. And
see, what I see is a lot of people only care about black people if they're in the womb. They don't care about black people once they're born. They only care about black people in the womb.
Wow.
And I'm going, no. You got to care about that little girl after she's born.
Right.
Okay. You got to care about, they're only worried about black children in the womb. And I'm going to go, no, that's a subtle racism and you just need to own up to it. Okay. I actually think, it was Einstein who said racism is the sin of white people. I actually disagree with him. I've been in 164 countries. I think it's the most common sin in the world. No matter where you go, the Northern Italians don't like the Southern Italians. This tribe doesn't like this tribe. And it's all about fear. That I feel like I have to put you down to build myself up. And because I don't feel good about me, I really don't want you feeling good about you. And it's all based fear-based. And so to me, to make abortion trump every other issue, particularly when we have a clearly a society that is funding, or not funding, but... what I'm saying, giving permission to racism. Okay. And in the debate, for instance, President Trump was asked, can you disavow white supremacy? Wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you doing? Then you are tacitly approving it.
Right.
Okay. You're tacitly approving. If you won't, there's a difference between disavowal and even disapproval.
Right.
He said, I disavow those guys. That's passive. Disapproval is they're wrong.
Right.
Okay, they're wrong. The main thing is two things. Christians today lack biblical discernment. They lack biblical discernment. So they're making decisions based on political values rather than biblical values. This is a real problem. This whole election, regardless who you vote for, has revealed that most Christians don't have a biblical worldview. They don't vote from a biblical worldview. They vote from a political worldview. And they, and their belonging, their identity comes primarily from politics.
There was a study that came out yesterday of self-proclaimed evangelicals who are planning to vote in this election. And when they asked the primary issues that they're voting on, it was shocking. 11% said pro-life issues.
Wow.
This is stated evangelicals who are voting in this election. Only 11% were voting pro-life. The vast majority was 26% said economic issues.
Really?
Yeah. And others, military and all that, were kind of peppered in. But 11%. I always thought it was like an 80% thing, you know, like... And so it's like now it's just, you're right. It's just now partisan. It's just like,
yeah, it's partisan. And it's my identity is tied to see the Christian nationalism thing. Here's the problem. If somebody says, is Jesus right wing or left wing? Jesus said, I'm not either wing. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, my servants would fight. Okay, my servants would fight, but I'm not having them fight because this is not the battle we're in. Okay, my kingdom is not of this world. I'm going to actually do a message. You know, who knows what's going to happen after the election? It may not even be decided for weeks or whatever. It could be, it's drawn out and it could be challenged on either side, blah, blah, blah. So I've already planned the week after the election, I'm going to do a message or finish James called the Unshakable Kingdom. And the bottom line, that's a phrase out of Hebrews, where he says, we have an unshakable kingdom, that my kingdom is not of this world. Regardless of whoever is in power, every dictator dies, every president gets out of office, the church goes on. And so we have an unshakable kingdom that we are called to. What we're called to do has no bearing on who gets elected. You know, I've said many times, it's not who we put in the White House, it's who we put on the cross that really is our savior. No politician's going to save us. Right. They never will. And in many ways, it's kind of, which hypocrite do you want to vote for?
I feel like so many Christians are scared if the other side wins. We will lose our freedom. We will lose our right to this or that, whatever. Right. And it's like, I'm trying to find where Jesus talked about protect your rights.
Yeah.
He always talked about, you're going to be persecuted. You're going to be hated, you know?
Like, exactly. Well, and here's the other thing too. How did a nation that's as free as America is become a nation where everybody, literally every single person, thinks they're a victim? Okay.
That's interesting.
The left thinks they're victims. Okay. Yeah. White supremacists think they're victims. The Christian right think they're victims. Socialists think they're victims. Name one group that doesn't think they're a victim. How in the world did we get in the freest country in the world and all of a sudden everybody thinks they're being victimized?
So it's easy for a lot of our audience just to say, yeah, both sides are wrong. It's all corrupt.
Yeah.
What does it matter? I don't care. You know, I'm heavenly minded, so I'm not going to engage it. Right. But I don't feel like that's the answer either. What words of advice would you give to a 25-year-old trying to navigate these political waters?
Well, the first thing is to realize that everything is more complex than politics makes it to be. Politics makes everything to be this or that, A or B. There's no A to Z. Okay. And everything, if you listen to the, in California, we have propositions that people vote on. If you listen to these laws on TV, you go, yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to vote that way. The next one, the ad comes on, I go, no, I'm not going to vote that way. You know, because it's the way they're framing it, right, which is telling me, okay, there's a lot more complexity here. And you have to decide what's the higher value on each issue. And that means, goes back to being discerning, being wise, knowing scripture and knowing what does God value? Okay. What does God value? Well, I'll tell you one thing. There are over 2,000 verses, in the Bible about the poor. How did I go through Christian college, two Christian seminaries, get an earned doctorate without ever hearing anything about the poor except we ought to give to them? Right. You know, nothing about how do you help the poor get out of poverty, things like that. Justice. Look up how many times the word justice used in the Bible. And yet we don't want to use that word. We don't, liberty and justice for all. My big plea really is become more discerning. Don't automatically listen. If something's stated enough, people will believe it, even if it's a lie. We know that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Hitler proved that. If you just say something over and over and over, then all of a sudden people tend to think that a truth they've heard before is true, or an idea they've heard before is true, but an idea that's new is a lie. Mm-hmm. They tend to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a society now, and I blame, actually three things. First, I blame social media. Okay. Social media. I used to think that social media was neutral. I really don't think that anymore. Mm-hmm. I see it's turned too many Christians into egotists. Yeah. Okay. They're all trying to do their so-called perfect life. It's creating stress among an entire generation that has to, the FOMO and, you know, and fear, you know, being left out and the fear of, well, I've got to look good on this. And so they're 15 minutes of fame. They can't enjoy life. They're producing their own life. They're producing a TV show. But it also allows everybody who's the most radical to have a platform.
Right.
This has created so much of that. Then the 24-hour news channels, which aren't really news. They're opinion, okay? Yeah. They stopped being at news a long time ago. I actually watch BBC. Okay? Because the other channels are simply giving me their content with opinions, and I'm going, I don't need your opinions. I can make my own. Okay. I can make my own opinion, and I don't want to hear you. What we saw, the ultimate example of this was the first debate. The first debate is what happens on CNN and Fox every night.
Right. That's true.
Okay. It was yelling over each other. Okay. That was no debate. That was the worst debate in history.
It was horrible. Okay?
But what it did, it simply showed that the culture has bought into the format that we now see on cable news.
So social media, 24-hour news.
Yeah.
These are the two of the three things. What's the third? Yeah.
Well, I think, honestly, and I try not to criticize any government official, but I will tell you this. There are government officials that have made it okay to be rude.
Right.
Okay. There are government officials out there that have made it okay to demean, to dismiss, to belittle. Let me show you. Let me read your verse I just read. Hang on here. If I've got it right here. I was working on the message for this weekend, and I can't find it. But anyway, it's a verse in Psalms where it says, and they love to be mean. They love being mean. And I'm going, man, I know a bunch of politicians like that who love being mean. And they like to skewer. And they play gotcha even when everybody knows. Hey, everybody who's in public life should have a 5% grace factor for what they say. Okay? Okay. You, me, okay? Because given enough words, I'm going to say something stupid. And so don't then make my whole ministry about something stupid that I said. Okay. Yeah. Don't make your whole ministry about something stupid. Everybody says stupid stuff. You do it all the time. And if you say enough words, the Bible says in the multitude of words, there is sin.
I like that.
Right.
So in 2008, you hosted the Saddleback Civil Forum, and you had both candidates on the church stage individually, and you talked to them about issues that mattered to Christians, and you let them say whatever they were going to say. It was broadcast to a national audience, and you didn't give your two cents. You didn't tell your congregation what to do after that information. We were talking about that on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, I can't imagine something like that ever happening again. Right. I mean, like, this political climate now, it almost seems like it's so broken.
Yeah.
How do we get back to the place of civil dialogue where we can, we can disagree with people, you know, in a civil manner that, you know, we can then talk about deeper issues that can move the country forward. It seems like right now there's no civility, and, and if you disagree with me on one thing, well, now you're
the enemy.
You're canceled. I cancel you. You know, you're the enemy.
I dehumanize you. Yeah. I don't even recognize your right to exist.
Right.
And, well, you're right. It had already changed. The culture had already started changing. That 4 years after that, I declined to do it because I just said it's already become too uncivil. So I certainly wouldn't have done it this time, but even 4 years after that one, they came to me. The networks actually came and said, you were the highest rated debate. It was the most learning situation because you asked the exact same question to both people.
Right.
And so you could compare apples to apples. You didn't comment. You didn't, you weren't unfair. I remember the head of CBS News wrote and said, I've seen the future of debates. And they, 4 years later, they said, will you do it? And I said, no. I said, it's already become too uncivil.
So how do we get back to that? Or can we?
Really, you know, I don't want to sound super spiritual, but it's only going to happen when there's a revival in our hearts. And I honestly think that COVID could be one of the
precursors. That bad people don't come back to God in good times.
Right.
People come. Go read Judges. Go read the whole history of that. When things are bad, then we come back to God. Right. And COVID is causing people. Here's an interesting statistic. I saw one that said that during COVID, 50% of millennials admitted to watching a church service online during COVID. 50%. Now, this is the generation that walked away.
Right.
Okay. That walked away from the church. Wash my hands, forget it. But 50% of them, when you're in a fix, you're looking for a spiritual foundation.
Right.
So it may be that COVID and a few other things. But here's an interesting thing, Cameron. If you know history, every other time in history that America has had a disaster, we have banded together. Hmm. If it's a fire, if it's a flood, if it's a terrorist attack.
Right.
When 9/11 happened, the Democrats and the Republicans stood on the Capitol steps together, held hands and saying, God bless America.
I remember.
That's not going to happen right now. Okay. Now, what's interesting is in history, this is not unusual. In history, the only disaster that actually divides people is a pandemic. Because when a pandemic comes through, people become afraid. And they start becoming afraid of each other.
Of each other, right.
And they start tribalizing. And they start dividing. And are you on my side? Are you on the other side? And we were already in that with the politics. And this came on. What I have to say, go back and say, now remember, Christianity grew the fastest in the first 300 years of Christianity, before Constantine. It grew the most rapid. What happened in those years? Well, first, Christians were persecuted. Second, it was illegal to be a Christian. Third, you couldn't worship publicly. You were more likely to be nailed to a cross or burned on a cross or whatever, fed to lions. And there were no church buildings. Okay, no church buildings during the fastest period of growth. But there's another factor that a lot of people miss. In the first and the third century, there were two great pandemics in the Roman Empire. The Justinian pandemic, and I can't remember what the other one's called, but they were the Black Plague. They were death. And millions of people died in those two plagues in the first and third century. In both of those cases, people started fleeing the urban areas because they didn't know anything about germs or viruses, or they just thought, well, maybe it's just in the city. So they were all fleeing the city. Christians, our job is to run to the pain, to run into the pain. Christians moved into the cities, moved into the urban areas to care for the sick and dying. And in those pandemics and in our showing hospitality, we invented a thing called the hospital. Hmm. The church invented the hospital during a pandemic. Government didn't invent hospital. Business didn't invent hospital. Academics did. The church invented the hospital, showing hospitality to people who were dying and caring for the sick. And that's where the phrase came, see how they love one another. And what I'm saying right now is that the church, instead of being so concerned about how do we get them back into the building, how do we get them back to us, should be flipping it and going, how do we get into the community so that they, if they like what they see, they will listen to what we say. Hmm. If they like what they see in us, they'll listen. We've lost the right to lead with words. Words are important. You have to share the gospel. You can't just do good works. You have to share the gospel, but you have to lead with works. And people go, that's what I expect a Christian to do. Now, the most recent one that we're doing is about 6 months after COVID had been going, we started going, okay, what's the next big killer app that Saddleback should invent besides pop-up food services, which any church can do because you don't have to have a building to do it, okay?
Right.
What's the next killer app? And we came up with a series of programs to help parents and kids deal with online school and teachers. And this whole series of things, when kids are stuck at home, And kids are bored and parents are pulling their hair out. And we started a series of programs we call First Aid for Families. Okay. First Aid for, and it's like, how can we help? Now, people say, well, we're all in the same boat. We're not. We're all in the same storm, but we're not all in the same boat.
That's right.
Some people are in yachts.
Right.
And if you can work at home, you're probably doing okay. If you got the kind of job where you can work at home, fine. I'm working at home. I got a little bit more time at home and stuff like that. But some people are not in a yacht. They're in a rowboat.
Right.
And some people are just hanging on the driftwood.
That's right.
Okay. And they're homeless. And how do you shelter at home when you don't even have a home?
Well, I mean, the rich have gotten richer and the poor have gotten poorer during this pandemic.
Absolutely. The inequity has increased. Yeah. And a lot of people have made a lot of money during the last 7 months. So what we have to do as the church is, to me, the heroes right now are you single parents who are trying to take care of kid. Mm-hmm. Okay. And even worse than that, if you're a single parent and you're living in an apartment.
Yeah.
In New York City. And I can't go outside, okay? And I'm trying to put food on the table, and my job happens to be I was a waitress, okay? Or most of the racism has unfairly affected who gets hurt the most economically during this, because the lower paying jobs are all the service jobs, mm-hmm. okay? And if I'm clean up at the restaurant, or I'm an assistant clean up at the hospital, or I'm a taxi, or I'm an Uber driver, or what, the lowest paying jobs are actually the ones that require you spend the most time with people. And so that's where we have to help those. We got really big on the issue of when Ahmaud Arbery died, and then the others happened, and then George Floyd died, and I've got 16 black ministers on my staff. Okay. Saddleback may be the most ethnically diverse church in America. We speak 167 languages.
Wow.
Okay. 167 languages. We're intentionally diverse. The A in Saddleback's name stands for All Nation Congregation, which means we want our church to look like heaven's going to look like. So of my 20 campuses, most of those guys aren't white guys. Okay. They're Hispanic. They're Asian, they're black, they are Middle Eastern, we have Indian, but I really, when I saw this happening and the brutalization and racism coming back to the forefront, I thought, okay, it's not enough to simply be a multicultural church. We've been a multicultural church for 20 years. We have to be an anti-racist church.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, we have to be a pro reconciliation, a pro-justice church. So I invited my black staff to spend time with me, and I said, and we did a Zoom call, and I said, guys, I need you to just level with me. I don't want to hear about when you experienced prejudice and rejection as a kid. I want to hear about how you've heard it, felt it at Saddleback. Even though we are a multicultural church, where have you felt not heard, not allowed to be yourself? Where have you? Well, I'm talking about now. And it was a 2.5 hour meeting. It was brutal. It was painful. It was beautiful. It was healing. It was, we all cried together and tears. And it was a wonderful move of the spirit in that. And when I finished that and Kay was in on that call, I said, okay, now I need you to do something really gutsy. I need you to tell your stories right now to the whole staff in our next staff meeting, online, 500 staff. And they all swallowed hard. I said, guys, this is the only way we're going to get there, is through conversation. And for people to understand, because you've been friends with all these people, but we've never talked about race that much.
Right.
Okay. We just went and talk about it. Okay. It's just, we're friends, but we don't talk about how it hurts you.
Right.
Every time another black guy gets shot and killed. And so we then spent The next, we did seven staff meetings of over 2 hours each. It was almost 17 and a half hours that we, it was like recovery for, racial recovery for staff. And these people shared their stories, and then I let the staff respond. And there was weeping, and there was repentance. And first all of my Black leaders shared. Then I had all of my elders come on and share, and their repentance. And their repentance, we didn't, I had no idea. Like one guy goes, Art AC, who's my pastor at LA, I've known you for 15 years. We've never talked about race. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. AC's a Black guy. And John, who's over at my Costa Mesa or Newport Mesa area, John said, you know, he told a story. He said, you know, a while back, I took some buddies of mine, Black guys, and we were up at Universal Studios, and we're walking the studio walk. And we're just hanging out, talking in front of a restaurant. And the owner didn't like it. So he calls the cops and said, they're loitering. What had we done wrong? We're just Black. That's the only thing. We're just Black standing. Police came over, arrested us all for loitering, put handcuffs on us. As we start marching us across off in front of everybody else, I said, this is a little tight. Can you loosen it a little bit? The guy knocks my hat off, said, just shut up and be quiet. When we get in there in the police station, they asked us for ID, and they saw on my ID that I was not only an officer in the Army, but I was a Saddleback pastor. And they said, oh, we're sorry, you can go. What was that? Pure racism.
Yeah. Okay. What's amazing to me is how this season has illuminated that problem in the church, and how the church has not stepped up even now in the racial tension. Again, I kind of come back to, because of the partisanship of it.
Right.
If you care about racial justice, if you care about others, right, you're a leftist.
Right.
And that means you're right, against right, whatever. And it seems like there's big parts of the church that won't engage this issue because they see it as a liberal issue.
Well, we have decided we're going to have to invent new terms. We're going to stop using the term social justice because some people hear the word social and think socialism.
Right. That's right.
Okay. So we're just going to get, you know, I was talking to John Perkins, who I had out, and I'm helping him with some stuff. And John goes, you're not going to use the word racist anymore. He goes, racist is like the N word for white people. Hmm. He goes, it just makes, nobody's going to admit to it. And all right, it does is make people mad.
Right.
And so said, I don't use that word anymore. So we're trying to come up with new words. So we have been moving ahead in that we're working on a curriculum right now to take all of our small groups through on racial justice. We're working on that. I did a call with all the Black members of Saddleback Church. And I did a big town hall call. And I said, now I want you to tell me the same thing that I heard from my staff.
Wow.
When have you felt? And people would say this, Rick, I love my church. I love you. But many times I just feel like my church doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. Said, I'm the only Black woman in a small group of white women. Not one person has asked me, how do you feel about these shootings?
Right.
And yet I have a son, Ahmaud Arbery's age. Mm-hmm. And it scares me. And I said, you know what? Nobody likes to see a red light when you're driving down the street. But I said, and I've been pulled over like everybody else does. It always raises your fear level, but I've never been afraid somebody's going to throw me on the ground.
Right.
And I've never been afraid that somebody's going to pull a gun on me and shoot me.
Right.
Driving while white. Okay. So it's a different level. People should not be afraid in their own country. I said, now look at this. 1619. Okay. The first slaves arrived. 1613, 1609, I guess it was, whatever it was, when Jamestown was founded. And about 13 years later, slaves arrived. Okay. That's 2 years before the pilgrims got here. Okay. Slaves have been here longer than pilgrims. It's their country too.
Right.
Okay. So it's not like it's not their country. People say, go home. Why? I've been here longer than you. You know, you came in the 1800s. You came in the early 1900s, stuff like right, that. My family's been here longer than you. So we're then the other thing I did, and this was a tough one, is I called all the law enforcement officers of Saddleback onto a call.
Oh my.
And I had about 80 of those. Well, they're going to be the most resistant. Okay. Sure. And I'm going to go, guys, nobody's saying all cops are bad. Okay. Right. Nobody's saying that. There are a lot. In fact, the worst enemy of a good cop is a bad cop.
That's right.
But you can't keep saying, well, we don't know all the facts. If I got 6 bullet holes in my back, I don't need any more facts than you shot me 6 times in the back. Would you shot me 6 times in the back if I was white? Okay. And it got a little heated. You know, I have to say it got a little heated because they didn't understand. But then others spoke up and said, thank you for speaking up. There is endemic racism. And I've been a cop for years and I have seen it. And we they're so afraid of the, well, it's going to tar everybody. I said, but guys, you don't understand. Until you speak up and say, this isn't right, people are going to assume you're siding with them.
That's right.
So for instance, we did a Black Lives Matter, we didn't call it that, but it was a unity march with some black churches, Saddleback did. And the head, the chief of not chief of police, but the chief of sheriff, Orange County Sheriff's member, Saddleback, he marched with us.
Wow.
And so we marched with a number of sheriff's deputies and the county sheriff with sister black churches in the area. Basically say, this is inexcusable.
Well, there's nobody that I've ever followed and known in Christian leadership that has provided clarity and direction and wisdom and in a unifying way the way you have. And I just want to publicly honor you and thank you for that. You've helped me navigate political waters and justice waters, and you've impacted my life in a significant way. And even just the way the stories you're telling of the ways that you've engaged this year,
yes,
you are providing an example for other churches and other leaders, and it's inspiring. And I'm just grateful for your role in all this.
I love you, buddy.
Love you too. That was Rick Warren. Make sure to read our feature with him in the upcoming November issue of Relevant Magazine. And to engage and be part of what he's doing, check out the resources at PastorRick.com and Saddleback.com. Well, that's it, everybody, for this special edition of Unedited. If you liked what you hear, maybe we'll bring it back. Let us hear from you. Hit us up on Twitter at Relevant, or you can hit us up on Instagram at Relevant Magazine or on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. If you want a new season of Unedited, maybe we'll do it. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Cameron Strang.
Relevant Podcast Network.